Disclaimer: the views and opinions expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show. From Orange County, California, I'm Zach Bertie. Welcome to AnCast. Justin is on vacation in New York City this week. So joining me in the co-host chair, as she was in the revolving third chair last week, Associate Editor Gia Manry. Hey, Gia.
Hey, and I am on unvacation in Texas.
That's right, you are in Texas.
So have yes, you, until tomorrow, have my last you, night.
Oh, okay. When are you moving there?
That's not going to be for another, like, I'm kind of roughly estimating 6 to 8 weeks for that move.
Oh, okay. Okay. So you're not being doomed to Texas for, you got a little time left on the.
A little time left to enjoy non-Texas summer weather nice temperate climate of California.
At least the summer's ending, so.
Yes.
If it's six to 8 weeks, maybe it'll be okay.
Yeah, well, I'm going to prepare for the worst and hope for the best on that one.
Does it snow there?
A little bit, I guess. This is the Dallas-Fort Worth area that we're talking about, and I understand that every couple of years they get a bit of snow, and I actually heard this year they had kind of a lot. And actually, that's the same thing in Portland, where just every couple of years, it just snows like a few inches, and everybody just freezes and stops doing anything remotely productive because they're like, what the hell, there's snow.
Kind of like when it rains in Los Angeles and everyone just drives like the world is ending.
yeah, actually a lot like that.
So it's been not exactly a tremendously busy week, but I just haven't really gotten around to watching much anime. The only thing I saw, I popped in Kashern Sins, which Funimation sent along, and it looks great. It's native HD, so this is a native HD Funimation Blu-ray release. So if you buy it, it is not an upscale, and it looks really good. I fell asleep though during the first episode, so I don't think I'll be. I just don't think it's my kind of a thing. It's a neat visual style, but meh.
Yeah, I've actually watched a bit of that myself. Not super recently, but I was really impressed with a lot of the visuals. I mean, the style of it was really cool. It's definitely not for everybody. It's very like kind of slow moving emo, like oh my god, guilt trip kind of stuff.
It didn't seem like it was very much fun.
No. It's not a fun show, for sure.
It's super angsty.
Yeah.
A lot of Linkin Park music videos set to that one.
Yeah, I could see that. I've never looked for it for what I hope are obvious reasons, but I could definitely imagine such a thing.
I don't think the show's popular enough to have music videos made.
Maybe not. I don't know. I bet if I searched for Kashern AMVs, I'd find stuff.
Yeah, you'd probably find a lot of stuff. Did you get around to anything?
Yeah, let's see. I've been keeping up to date, actually. The only show I've been watching consistently is Occult Academy, which, you know, like, I'm still really enjoying it. Every episode managed to have, you know, at least some little thing that kind of surprises me that I wasn't expecting, which is, for me, kind of a big deal, because so many things are just so, okay, this is cute, but I totally knew what was going to happen kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's sort of telegraphed from the very first frame of the first episode.
Yeah, exactly. So I've been enjoying that. I also just caught up on High School of the Dead. Actually, this was, I talked last week about the Baltiport thing, and briefly, Christina V was there, although she opted to crash in Baltimore instead of flying on, but she was talking about how I really should check out the rest of High School for the Dead, which I only watched the first episode of. So I sat down and watched through the remaining episodes, and it's kind of weird because actually the most interesting character is the Tsundere character, who is usually like the least interesting character in a show. And I say most interesting kind of lightly.
Is that that's the she pink hair?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so she's the one that pals around mostly with...
Not Tits McNurse or whatever.
McNurse. She's not the one that pals around... She's the one that pals around with the Kota Hirano character, right?
Yeah, that's the one. And kind of mercilessly abuses him. She's actually kind of an interesting character because she's sort of figuring out that being, like, a genius may or may not actually help her in this particular ordeal. But I'm still, you know, I was still expecting just such a gleeful, over-the-top zombie thing that it's still not quite what I would have expected, but it's entertaining enough.
Yeah, the manga for that got licensed, and I'm sort of, which I can't believe it hasn't been licensed yet. Talk about a no-brainer again. Like, that, I'm sort of interested in seeing that just because, I don't know, like, I kind of want to just like skip to the fourth volume and find out like where it's going. Because yeah. Right now I'm just like, okay, zombies. All right, this is a zombie movie. I get it. But where is it going? Like, that's what I'm interested in. So, I don't know, maybe I'll just skip to the, like, episode 12 or something like that.
Yeah, well, if I remember correctly, I mean, that's a Yen Press license, but it's not one of their Square Enix titles.
No.
So that might mean it has a shot at showing up on their online thing. That might be kind of neat. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, I don't like reading manga online.
I do it if it's legal.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I don't know. I don't like reading comic books or graphic novels. I can do web comics, but not graphic novels for some reason. I don't know. It just bothers me.
Yeah, I don't know. It's always worked out okay for me, but part of it is also that a long time ago, I stopped buying manga as my thing to read on planes because it's so space inefficient.
Terrible idea, because it takes you 10 minutes to read one.
Exactly. So, you know, so now I always carry, I always have my Time, my Newsweek, and at least one novel. So for me, like, that's my big, like, reading something, like, in an actual physical medium time is on the plane when I need to have something that works for that. So reading manga online's never been a problem for me.
Actual brief tangent. You brought up reading shit on planes. I'm able to confirm today that we are going to have a live and cast taping at New York Anime Fest this year. In addition to a regular Anime News Network panel, we're going to have both. So all you East Coast anime kids can show up and throw rotten fruit at us or whatever it is you want to do. but that'll be happening. And I'm not looking forward to the plane ride, but I miss New York City. I haven't been back in so many years. And so I'm really looking forward to it. I specifically asked Chris, like, can I go to New York Anime Festival? Because, man, it's been so long since I've been out there. But anyway, that tangent. Awesome. Anything else you got around to?
I did watch the first episode, quite belatedly, of Legendary Heroes of Legend, mm-hmm. Or whatever it's called. And I was actually, one of the things that really surprised me about it more than anything was that the quality of the animation seemed really poor. Like, I felt like this was, like, episode 6, you know, not the first episode, which I kind of expect to be a little bit shinier and prettier than, like, the rest of an episode.
It's like episode, well, like specifically episode 6 of a show from 1997.
Yeah, right. Yeah, no, it looked really, I mean, and it, you know, I was kind of expecting it to be maybe a little funnier. It just didn't do much for me at all.
Mm-mm. I was expecting kind of a satire, but it's just a straightforward, overly complicated Japanese role-playing game type fantasy show. I really hated it. I thought it was terrible. It was just another generic, like, role-playing game plot sort of pasted onto this 90s looking anime. I don't know why anime fantasy aesthetic has not moved past 1995, because it's still the giant candy colored pauldrons on everything, and it's a big sword with a crystal at the hilt. You know, it looks like 1995. That's what fantasy looked like back then, and it just hasn't evolved. And I don't know, like, Scrap Princess looked like that. I mean, really, any anime fantasy, they're still making Slayers. It still looks the way it did. I mean, redesign those fucking characters. I don't know. I can't handle that generic anime fantasy aesthetic. It's just too repetitive.
Yeah, you know, now that you mention it, that is, I mean, I'd never really thought about it before, but that is so incredible. Like, even when I was watching this one episode, the blonde sword woman from behind, I'm like, she looks like Gowrie. Huh.
Yeah.
Wait a minute, that shouldn't be right.
They must have, like, a character design Bible or something for fantasy shows.
I know, right? No, they all use the How to Draw Manga fantasy, which are all based on those 90s shows.
Yeah. Yeah, that shit has not changed. So I'll mention this briefly because I feel like I'm talking about this too much. But the thing that has eaten up the last couple of days for me is the fucking awesome Scott Pilgrim game that came out.
Yes, we picked that up yesterday, too.
It's so much fun. Like, it starts out really hard, but my characters are so powerful now, I can actually blow through it on the hardest difficulty. God, it's so good. For people who are interested, it's basically total 8-bit nostalgia geekery. It's basically a River City Ransom clone with some other elements in there. It's a great brawler, and the hit detection kind of sucks, but God, it's so much fun. It looks awesome. Man, I'm in love with it. Anyway.
Yeah, no, it's really great. I actually have only played it a little bit myself because I kind of want to get my own. I'm really bad at playing games with other people because I'm just not very good at them. So I'm kind of waiting for, like, when I can sit down and play it on my own for a bit and get more used to the controls and stuff. But, oh, the aesthetic, the music's really good.
Yeah, it's Anamanaguchi. It's a great, great chiptunes band. Probably the only actually known chiptunes band that's out there. but, yeah, super, super good, super good. There is virtually nothing to talk about this week. There's no news. Like, it's post it's post major con season, so nothing's really happening right now. And I was sitting there this morning thinking, like, okay, so we're going to tape the first segment this evening before we talk to Kuhn. What the hell are we going to talk about? And so I was like, well, I don't know. So I went to Twitter and said, hey, dudes, what are we supposed to talk about? And so I got a bunch of topics from them. So we can just sort of riff on these.
All right. All right. Awesome.
So they're all from Twitter. This is purely, you know, consider this filler. If you want to skip to the the interview segment, you can. Okay, we got a couple of silly favorites questions. Favorite classic NES game. That sort of ties into what we were talking about.
Excitebike, actually.
Really? Excitebike?
Yeah, well, it was the one game that, like, I would sit down and play that my brother wouldn't kind of, like, come in and sort of take over. Because he had no interest in Excitebike. You know, if it was Mario, I had to sit there and watch him play, or else my mother would come in and be like, Dan, let your sister play. And then I'd feel bad and eventually just invite him to come back and play for me.
Wow.
So, yeah, real depressing, actually.
I have two favorite classic NES games. They both hold the number one spot in my heart. DuckTales and Super Mario 2. Those are the best ones.
I like the music best in 2. Like, I feel like I keep talking about music. I liked the music best in 2.
It's only one song.
I know. I really liked it.
There's two songs. Sorry. Maybe three. Everyone I know shat on Super Mario 2 for the longest time because it wasn't like a traditional Mario game, but it was always my favorite when I was a kid. I played the hell out of that game. To this day, I can speed run it in 20 minutes. I can still do it.
Wow.
Let me tell you, that gets the ladies just going at the bar.
I'm impressed.
Okay, and final sort of silly one-off question. Do you have a dream game that you would want to see based on an anime? Like a dream video game that doesn't exist based on an anime.
I keep wondering why I haven't seen a Black Lagoon fighting game, I guess. That'd be kind of neat.
Like a traditional, like, 2D fighting game.
You kind of like, if you took sort of BlazBlue, like really, really high level graphics, not that anybody would spend that much money on a licensed game. But if they did, that'd be sweet, I guess.
Yeah. I don't know. That's interesting. I always think that they're sort of leaving money on the table, not making some kind of a Helsing video game. I don't know why that doesn't exist. I know Koto Hirano wants one to be made, but I guess there's no interest from any Japanese. I mean, I've asked him about that a couple of times. Like, why is there no Helsing video game? And he's like, I don't know. You tell me. So it's kind of interesting. But this brings to mind, like, it's not anime related, but there is one video game, and I think someone could make a hell of a lot of money on this, and I would pay a lot of money to be able to play this game. You tell me what you think. A fighting game, either done in, like, Super Street Fighter 4 style or a 2D game, that is, the fighting roster is the talking head lineup from Fox News, the talking head lineup from MSNBC, and CNN. And you throw them all...
play on, like... College Humor or something?
No. Like, this would be like a full-on, fully featured, serious fighting game where you could, you know, one guy picks Keith Olbermann, the other guy picks Bill O'Reilly or whatever. Like, you can unlock Larry King at one point. Who wouldn't want to play that? Like, wouldn't everybody on the planet be interested in playing that game at least once?
I would play it at least twice. I would actually venture to say I would play it at least 3 times.
I'm just shocked it doesn't exist. It's so obvious. It's all fucking wrestling-style talk on cable news anyway. Why don't they just go ahead and make the fighting game?
Yeah. Yeah, no, actually, I can already imagine it being featured on The Daily Show.
It would be amazing. And you could even have, like, an unlockable character, Jon Stewart. Be awesome.
Yeah.
Like, who wouldn't want that? That'd be amazing. Anyway.
Actually, he would probably be the you'd have to unlock Stephen Colbert, and Jon Stewart would be like the judge guy in the middle or something.
Sure, there you go. I think it would be awesome. Somebody out there, I mean, the likeness rights would be impossible to get, but it would be somebody out there make that. Okay, so that's all the silly little sort of one-off questions we've got. Lisa Patillo, who writes for us, wants to know, she's curious about the ANN-related material you and Justin are into. Obviously, Justin's not with us, but we can answer this anyway. The ANN-related material you guys are into past straight-up anime. Manga, toys, video games, city favorites. You can take that one, I guess.
Oh, man. I mean, obviously, I read plenty of manga. I've been addicted to Chi Sweet Home lately. I do like, she mentions toys, and I do like figures a lot. I wouldn't say I'm an avid collector because, frankly, they're way too expensive to be an avid collector of, but I have a strong appreciation for toys and figures. Actually, I like swag I can use in particular. I just got my hands on a One Piece towel I'm kind of excited about. I don't know, that's kind of my stuff.
You just got your hands on a One Piece towel that you're excited about this towel.
I am. I kind of am.
Actually, wait a second. That's something to talk about. Didn't you go to Funimation?
Yeah, I did.
Well, geez, why didn't we talk about that?
Well, it was a pretty brief. I just kind of ran by because they originally we were going to hang out for a little bit longer, but then it turned out there was an additional meeting that had been either slid in or forgotten about, or I forgot what. So we were only there for about 15 minutes, and we were mostly talking about how hot it is and how terrifying it is that I'm willing to move here having visited in this heat.
Okay, but, so it wasn't like a tour or anything. You just kind of popped in.
Yeah, no, I'd had a tour once before, so I already knew, like, to turn right at the giant claymore sword and then, like, turn left at the big One Piece wall thing, which is more or less how you get around foot, because the entire office looks, I mean, completely identical from one aisle to another, so you can only navigate based on the giant posters and stuff that they have up. It's a little scary.
Interesting. Huh. Well, I guess there wasn't much to talk about there. That's why we didn't talk about it. okay. So, moving on. In terms of Japanese culture-related material I'm interested in, I read manga when something catches my fancy. I just read Pipo Chu. I can never remember the exact title of it. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was really good. It's pretty fucked up, like kind of supremely fucked up, but I liked it all the same. I recommend people check that one out. I have a few anime toys, but they're in my closet. I only keep out, like, you know, I'm 30 years old. I can only have out X number of toys in my living room at any given time. So I only have, you know, one or two toys out. And right now it's reserved for my Dr. Venture and the Monarch Migos that I got at San Diego Comic Con. Which are awesome. I have the Henchmen 21 and 24, and those were the exclusive, and they're freaking awesome. But I don't want to take them out of the packages because they were con exclusive. So,
are you gonna get the Muppets?
No, I hate the Muppets. Everyone hates the Muppets. Well, who doesn't hate the Muppets?
I hate them, when they were talking, because at the Comic Con panel they were talking about whether they were going to do the Little Lord Fauntleroy version or the B pod, whatever the heck ones. I voted for the Little Lord Fauntleroy.
But in terms of like anime figures and stuff, I have some Hellsing figures, I have some Berserk figures, and they're cool. But you know, I had them on display for a year or two, and then I put them away. That's kind of how I am with that stuff. But yeah, I mean, I maintain a general interest in all things related to my line of work, and it's not just work. I've always been interested in that stuff, but I don't go out of my way to play like anime related video games. If it's good, I'll play it, but that's pretty much the only requirement. Okay. Deb Aoki, our friend, wanted us to talk about Yen Plus, which I have not had the chance to look at yet. Have you?
Very little. I remember actually when I was sitting in the panel, they were talking about how they had just launched it. It was online, even as we spoke, and I went online, I signed up on my little netbook there, and the first thing I noticed was that it was broken. I did check back in a little bit later, and it was working again, but they had a page flipping problem. I couldn't flip past the like title page for Daniel X.
Well, so people know what it is.
I haven't read everything.
Talk a little bit about what Yen Plus is.
Yen Plus is the digital version of Yen Press's originally print magazine, which the original print version had a bunch of Korean manhwa, they had a bunch of manga, and they had some original titles like the big Maximum Ride manga and stuff. The online version currently, doubtless due to rights difficulties, I would guess, has only the original English language stuff and a couple of the manhwa, including the ever-popular Jack Frost, when you really, really, really need some incredibly violent fan service. they've got the new Daniel X thing up, which is like Maximum Ride. It's based on Jane Patterson novel, the Gossip Girl manga.
I just got that in the mail.
Things up there.
Yeah. Gossip Girl. well, it's basically like the Marvel application. You have to buy these books, or this is free, right? This is
currently it's free, and it's gonna go to a pay per month, like $2.99 a month gets you access, and you keep paying. You get, I think they said 2 months of back stock essentially, but you don't get continued access to it. And I know they've talked about they hinted strongly, I think, that they were gonna get Yotsuba. Actually, Yotsuba and, Plus and whatever they call it in English, in the Yen Plus digital version, which would be cool. And I really hope that they get a few more of the Japanese titles in there to kind of draw people in. Because, I mean, as much as Aaron's absurd armada looks kind of cute, and it's already got 258 chapters up.
Jesus.
You know, I've got other things I would like to be reading too.
So good experience, sure. Bad experience. Do you think people should check it out? What do you think?
Oh, definitely people should check it out. It's very light. Like I've used a bunch of these kinds of programs, and sometimes they spend so much time on like animating the little page flip that it just drags out the experience a lot. And it doesn't do that. There are a lot of ads in it, for obviously a bunch of other, Yen Press stuff, Cirque du Freak, Soul Eater, that kind of thing, which was a little surprising this early on, but
well, that's the that's the magazine though. The magazine, like every fourth page, was an ad for some some Hatchet Books publishing young adult targeted thing. I mean, that's what that magazine was for. That's what that was for. It was purely promotional. They had no regular.
Oh yeah,
ads.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, but I'll miss the free swag that came with the magazine on occasion.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Yen Plus never had enough in it that I really wanted to read to check it out on a monthly basis. But I think moving it to a since it is purely promotional, like this isn't a magazine that existed to generate ad revenue for them. This was a vehicle to promote their books. That's what it was for. I think this is probably smart for them because they don't have to pay to have it printed. Like, this is a good way to go.
Mm-hmm.
When people were like talking about, oh, it's going away, it's going away. It's like, well, this is a commercial. It's just moving to a different format. It's not like a huge failure, like, you know, Shoujo Beat or whatever. I thought that was a huge failure, but it did fail.
Yes,
but it's not quite the same thing.
Yeah, it's like an ad going from TV to YouTube.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So it's not really that big a deal. Probably smart, probably money saving for them, so I don't think it's a huge issue. The manga sphere has a lot more to say about that than I do, though.
Okay. As usual.
All right. From Bruce Wayne Brady, 80s remakes that are raping our childhood. Smurfs next year in 3D. Ugh. Okay. First of all, I don't know if you're like me, but I hate the phrase raping my childhood. Unless you have a time machine and a big libido, you cannot rape my childhood. That stuff existed. Like, I don't like that notion that somehow new versions of old things ruin it. Not only that, new versions of shitty 80s toy commercials are somehow ruining things. I don't understand it. And who gives so much about a shit about the Smurfs that they honestly call it raping? Like, you can rape the Smurfs all day. I am pro Smurf rape is what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying, Gia. No, I'm just saying, like, who cares? It was a toy commercial from the 80s. It's now a toy commercial for 2010. Like, Alvin and the Chipmunks. Dude, is there somebody out there who really thinks that the Alvin and the Chipmunks movies are somehow ruining this massive legacy? Like, come on.
You know what, actually, I can't remember if this was 80s or 90s, but I would actually kind of like to see a return to Mighty Max, because I actually really liked that show.
Mighty Max is, I think, mid-90s, maybe. I was a little too old for it when it came out, I think. But, yeah, I don't know. It was a toy commercial then. It's a toy commercial now. I don't understand why people treat these things as though they're sacred. But if someone tried to fuck with He-Man, let me tell you, I would be very upset. So I guess it all boils down to what you care about.
Yeah. I mean, the Smurfs movie does look, obviously, really, really, really bad. But I'm not sure that you could have made a good Smurfs movie.
No, you couldn't make a good Smurfs cartoon. There was never a good one. There's no good Smurfs anything. It's the fucking Smurfs. Like, God, who cares? It's a kid's thing being turned into a modern kid's thing. I don't understand the fervor. Even Transformers. Transformers was a cartoon that had some of the most monumentally stupid episodes in it. Like, the plots were really stupid. I mean, really stupid. There's an episode where they go back in time and the Decepticons are trying to destroy King Arthur's court, so the Autobots have to enlist Merlin's help. I mean, that's how stupid that show was. And people complain about the movies. I mean, the second movie was exceptionally bad, but it's a dumb kids show being turned into a dumb kids movie. I mean, I don't get it.
Well, then there's like the G.I. Joe one where, you know, they tried to make it into an adult's movie from a kid's cartoon, and that's also kind of
more of a teenager movie. I wouldn't say it was an adult's film, but it did well enough to make a sequel. So I don't know. I mean, you can't really cling to the past that much. And I hate that phrase, raping our childhood. Just it's not destroying anything. The original still exists and it's probably on DVD. You can get what you want. You can stay with the old stuff. Doesn't matter. And it's not being made for you today. Like, it's being made for, if you have kids, your kids. So I don't know. Get over it. The 80s, Jesus. Okay, and finally, we got to wrap up because we got to get to Kuhn's interview here. Gatsu, you know, our everyone's favorite forumite, said, why don't you talk about the Expendables and Earthsea? So it should be mentioned that Earthsea is coming up. We have a very crowded box office weekend. And Earthsea is Tales from Earthsea, the Studio Ghibli movie directed by Hayao Miyazaki's kid, Gorō Miyazaki, is opening at, I think, the Angelica in New York City this Friday. And it's a terrible movie, and no one should see it. But
it is
opening. You never saw it?
No, I never got around to it. No, I never had the opportunity, I should say.
I saw a screening of it, and it's not good. All the action parts are literally in that trailer.
Ouch.
It is long and slow and boring. And Ursula K. Le Guin, who wrote the books, she didn't like it either. She didn't understand why everybody was white, which is her thing. That's what she always talks about when she talks about Earthsea. But I think it was actually, having watched the sci-fi miniseries version, which was terrible, it was more watchable than the Ghibli version, which is just slow and just pointless to the point of numbing. It's numbing. I don't know. It has its fans. Like, that movie did have its fans, but it was just a colossal letdown. And I hope, like the apple fell very far from the tree in this scenario, I think.
It always sounded like it. I remember I was talking to somebody who was like, oh, but, you know, because there was supposedly a rift between a father and son around the same time as that movie, and somebody came to me and said, oh, but they made up after the movie. I was like, all I remember was that Hayao Miyazaki's statement was something like, well, it was made with heart, or something along those lines, and I was like, ow.
You know, he publicly trashed it. Like, he said he said he was disappointed and he didn't like it. And that furthered the rift. And people say that Ponyo, apparently, is sort of an apology letter from Miyazaki to his kids for being an absentee father, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
That's what people say. I don't know. I don't know that you can read that much into Ponyo, but if it's true, well, I don't know. Everyone's got to make peace with their kids at some point. As for the Expendables, I don't know. Mike Toole said it was good. Maybe I'll go see it on Sunday when I'm bored. I don't have like this huge hard-on for 80s action movies. I never did. I think the best one from that era is Total Recall, which is sort of like 92, I think, 91, maybe 90. But the rest of them, people get these massive like hard-ons for like Cobra and Renegade and fucking all the Rambo movies. And I was never really into that stuff. I mean, some of it was okay, but this movie, like, I don't know, it's not coming up on my like, oh man, must see kind of radar. But I know a lot of people, it's like the event of the year for them.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of it, I mean, just that cast assembled is a pretty impressive feat, but I don't know, I'd rather just look at the cast list and then catch the movie, like, on TV in a few years when they're running it, like, on the TNT, more movie, less commercials, whatever thing. No, my big movie for the weekend is going to be Scott Pilgrim, because I still haven't seen it.
Yeah, I'm dragging Mamoo to see that, probably Thursday at midnight.
Nice.
That's how much I want to see it again. But enough, we can't keep talking about Scott Pilgrim on this podcast. We have to stop. It's going to drive people crazy. Okay. All right, let's go ahead and get to our interview.
Teaming up with Mr. T, golden sweet crispy teas. One bite and you're going to be eaten with the team. That's teaming up with Mr. T.
It's cool.
Teaming up with Mr. T.
Okay, we're back. Our guest this week probably doesn't really need much of an introduction. It's Kuhn Gao, the CEO of Crunchyroll. How's it going, man?
Good. Thank you for having me.
Thanks a lot for being on the show. So, obviously, we've got a lot to talk about here, but what I really want to know is, you know, people know the history of Crunchyroll, I think, pretty well at this point. We don't need to keep going back to the company's beginnings or anything like that. But now you're one of the major players in the anime industry, one of the few, say, sizable companies that's still around. It's you, Funimation, that's pretty much it. So how are things going now? I think that's what really people want to know. What's it like there now? How's it going?
Well, I think business for us is growing. Things are going okay. I think it's really comes down to what our focus is. We really try to build a product that the users, the fans, enjoy and want to use, and hopefully some of them will pay a little bit of money for. Mm-hmm. And what we built, we think, is something that, you know, wasn't around before. For example, a year and a half ago, you couldn't pay just a few dollars a month and be able to watch a great selection of anime content at the same time as it's broadcast on television. And we've really pioneered that simulcast experience and offered it at a great value. And I think fans are really embracing that.
Right, right. Now, the simulcasting does seem to be sort of the newest kind of initiative that you guys have going on, besides the manga thing. We'll get to that later. But in terms of the simulcasting, let's talk a little bit about the process of how that works. Tell us the average lifespan of a show from, you know, when you start, when you consider it, do you consider it? Do they offer it to you for simulcasting? How does that begin?
Well, I guess in terms of being in complete detail, you'd have to really go back to the production process. And this is something that I don't think many fans or customers know about, but simulcasting really starts at the licensing level. First, we approach broadcasters, licensors, weeks or even months in advance in order to license titles. And when we license them, there's, of course, a lot of challenges, which I think will be solved in the future. But let me outline what some of those challenges are. For example, sometimes a show isn't announced or even planned for broadcast until a few weeks before the season starts. Sometimes the consortium of rights holders is not formed. Sometimes they haven't decided who the overseas rights holder is, so you can't really license the show if they don't even know who's going to license it to you. Sometimes there's material challenges. For example, it's difficult to get the materials in advance quickly enough for it to be translated within the window to do a simulcast. Sometimes you have to respect the fact that even after the primary television broadcast, Japan wants to first broadcast it on its syndication networks before they allow streaming on outside of Japan. So there's quite a few challenges to the simulcast model, and it's been, you know, quite a lot of work for us every season in order to acquire those rights and to deliver that product. But we keep trying and we keep working hard, and we keep our goal is really to simulcast every single show on television for the entire world.
Wow. Okay. So yeah. Okay. So that begs the question. Is it worth it to license to simulcast every single show on Japanese TV? I mean, speaking as a critic, there's some real stinkers in there. And based on, like, I mean, I would imagine you have hits and then you have stuff that just doesn't generate enough traffic or interest to even warrant the cost of doing the simulcast. That situation has to occur, right?
Yeah, I think that's really for the fans to decide. We're really here to bring them everything there is in Japan. And if we bring that to them, then we feel like, you know, they can make the decisions on which show they like and which show they don't. At least fortunately for us, we have at least some economies of scale working in our favor. When we simulcast a lot of shows, it brings the cost down for all the shows.
Really? How so? How does that work?
Well, for example, we can get bulk discounts for production, for translation, for encoding, for digitization, even the bandwidth costs and so forth. But it's what we believe is there's got to be some sort of network effect. If we have one show and you know, we have two shows, the difference is not really twice as many users. Maybe some people would like the fact that we do have a more complete collection.
Right. I mean, even if they're not necessarily watching, say, Cobra.
Right. At least it's there offered for them.
Right, right. So what you're saying is that the stuff, you've got this scaled out to such a place where the failures don't necessarily impact your bottom line as much as they could.
That's right.
Okay, that's interesting. Now, staying on this particular subject for the moment, I was at your overwhelmingly attended Anime Expo Crunchyroll panel, which I believe had like seven of us in the room.
Attending. That was very last minute. So,
No, I know. That was a comedy of errors, I think, that led up to that thing just not being announced anywhere. But you said, and I think I'm quoting here, we can make money on any show, on any simulcast. It's possible. I mean, I know it's possible to make money. But even like something that just isn't a hit, somehow you're still making money on that. Is that true?
To a certain degree, yes. The cost in terms of producing and encoding and digitizing we've gotten it down to a level low enough that we don't really lose money for shows that might not be, you know, as popular for fans.
Right, right. Now, in terms of what is popular and what's not, it would occur to me, and tell me if I'm wrong on this, most of your traffic is generated by, like, three or four shows, and the rest of them are just kind of there. But really, the focus is these three or four big hits. Is that true? Like Naruto, Bleach, I mean, you've got all these, you've got the big hits that are sort of keeping the anime industry afloat as it is on their own. Is that true for your site?
Well, we try to promote each show equally. Of course, some shows are more popular than others. Media is hit-driven. So you're right. There are hits that do much better than other shows. So, not even just Crunchyroll, but, you know, for example, same for Viz. The most popular shonen titles perform best for them. Same for Funimation. Dragon Ball is over 50% of their revenue. You're right. Content business in general is hit-driven, but it's really the responsibility of, I would say, Crunchyroll and other companies in the industry to help figure out what's the next hit, to help foster what's the next hit. And the best way to do that is to make all the content accessible for all fans. And if they really like a show, then we can start building on that.
Right, right. Have you had any sort of unexpected hits, like something you put up and you're like, well, this probably isn't going to generate that much interest, but it turned out to be huge?
Of course. We've actually had quite a few. For example, Shugo Chara. Initially, we didn't really realize how strong the female demo was going to perform on our site. But that show has actually performed very, very well, way beyond our expectations. Other shows such as Time of Eve, which is actually an indie show, animated by pretty much one guy, has performed very well for us also. And we had quite a few other shows that you might not necessarily think are hits, but have performed so well that they've even been picked up after their simulcast on Crunchyroll by a local DVD distributor. Examples would include Glass Mask and so forth.
Oh, so the stuff that Section 23 is dumping out.
That's right.
Right. Interesting, interesting. talking about promotion. Now, do you guys have... I mean, this is I know you have a marketing team for the company itself, obviously. But does that marketing team ever work on, like, one show? Like, do you have people that it's their job to actually promote the shows themselves, or is it just the site?
Well, actually, how we structure it is we have brand managers, each brand manager is responsible for a handful of the shows that are on the site, and it's their core focus, core job, to promote just those titles. So we don't actually go promote the site. We don't actually promote Crunchyroll. We promote the shows.
Okay. Well, okay, so in that case, how come I never see any ads for Crunchyroll shows anywhere?
Well, we do have ads. So, for example, we have ad swaps in a number of different outlets. I believe we have some ad swap with, say, Otaku USA. We have ad swaps. I believe we did some ad swaps back in the day with ANN as well.
Okay, well, you're talking about swaps. Do they have a budget for advertising, or is it just sort of guerrilla, like whatever they can pull together?
Well, it's usually we provide inventory to the partner, and they provide similar inventory on their site for us. We're still a very small company, so right. We can't always afford to buy advertising. However, if we do ad swaps, it's much more budget conscious, and we have quite a lot of inventory on our site, so a lot of parties are interested in advertising on our site in exchange for us advertising on other sites.
Okay. Well, that's very interesting. So you've got sort of a catch-all, kind of like everything on TV. We don't really have a specific, there's nothing like specific you go after. You just go after everything. I do want to talk a bit about your dramas, the drama side. How is the drama side going?
It's doing very well. We don't focus that much on the drama side, but it's something that, you know, fans really are starting to embrace on our site. It's a little bit of a different demo. It's a little bit more female oriented, but it definitely performs very well, and we are looking to add more and more dramas to our site.
Okay, yeah, I'm curious about that. So what is the demographic breakdown between who goes to the anime side and who goes to the drama side? Is there a ton of crossover? Is there not a lot of crossover?
That's a good question. There's definitely a decent amount of crossover. The anime side is a bit more male-oriented, as you can suspect. It's about 70% male, 30% female.
Really?
But it really depends on the show. For example, shonen shows are 70-30, whereas shoujo titles are usually 80-20 in the other way. Dramas is very similar. It's about 70-30 female audience.
Okay. What I mean, I'm not super big into the J-dramas. You guys do Korean stuff too, right?
That's right. Well, our primary content is the Korean dramas. Okay. The Japanese dramas are very challenging in terms of right clearance.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
So that has been the number one challenge for us to get it onto the site.
Speaking of challenges, what are the biggest roadblocks in your way in terms of sort of fulfilling the promise and the dream of Crunchyroll? What's the biggest thing that gets in your way when it comes to the licensing side?
That's a very broad question. There's quite a few challenges, but it's really something that's future looking. So I think if we can really solve these challenges, it will be better for the entire industry. One I mentioned earlier is the licensing and the rights. As you I already previously mentioned, sometimes we can't even license a show because they haven't figured out who's the right window for licensing internationally, or they haven't formed a consortium, or there's material challenges, they can't get the tape early enough, things like that. So the production and rights issues is a huge challenge. But I think that going forward, it will steadily improve slowly. For example, as digital streaming becomes bigger business, all the companies will have to think about how to carve out the digital rights beforehand, before TV broadcast, which isn't done right now. Another is the production side. I think given the schedule of digital distribution, companies will have to think about how to distribute the content directly from the studio. Right now, it goes from the studio. They actually work in a digital framework. Then they output it to a tape, which is taken in by the TV broadcasters, which is then re-digitized. It would be much simpler to get the digital content directly from the studio, with bypassing the extra step. So that on the Japan side is one challenge. I think the other challenge is really having all of the industry figure out ways to work together. I'm not really sure if the listeners can appreciate this point, but the anime companies in this industry don't really speak to each other. And that's an observation I've made because I'm fairly new to this industry, but the companies don't really speak to each other or work that much with each other. But just to highlight my point, one Pixar movie like The Incredibles will sell more DVD than the entire anime manga industry in the U.S. For a whole year. So you're really talking about a very small industry that's still fairly fragile. So it's really important for everyone to, I would say, work together, focus on growing the industry, because we know the fans are very passionate about the content. They're great supporters of the content. And if they watch and they get hooked on one piece of content, one title, then we're convinced, at least at Crunchyroll, we're convinced that they're going to watch more and more content. They're going to consume more and more of this content, and then they're going to be otaku down the road. But really, we all need to kind of work together to figure it out.
Okay, so speaking of working together, this is a question I feel I have to ask. There has been, I would say, not necessarily a veiled, but maybe not as direct as some people might think, but there's definitely a little bit of a perceived rivalry between you guys and Funimation. And specifically, like, there's been a couple of press releases where you guys had conflicting numbers and you're disagreeing with each other publicly. What's going on there? You guys consider them direct competition? What's happening there? Why the pissing matches?
Well, I mean, I would say that in order to understand what Crunchyroll is all about, I really have to talk a little bit more about our core competency, our core strength. Crunchyroll is really founded by a bunch of engineers, who just happen to really like anime. We really get internet. We're really good at building internet product. Crunchyroll is not the first site we've done. We've built many sites before that are huge sites. For example, Hot or Not, Slide. We've worked on a number of huge sites with tens of millions of users. So our core competency is really building technology and building platform. So based on that, what we really want to do is help the existing companies in this space figure out how to best build their businesses online. So that's really our value proposition. And to prove that we can do it, we've built a website called crunchyroll.com, and all the technology and all the value and all the interactions we built with the users, those are all the tools that we can supply to the existing distributors in the US. So of course we don't feel competitive with Funimation, because we feel like we can help them reach even more users and build an even better product as a result.
Except you have absolutely none of their shows on your site at all. But I guess that's them not giving it to you, right?
Right.
Okay, just curious. Is there a sense of, so there's no sense of, you guys don't feel any sense of rivalry with Funimation? You don't look at it that way? Because, I mean, you've released press releases that were directly contradictory to theirs in the past.
Well, Funimation is clearly the leader for physical media, and we feel like we have the leadership position for online audience and digital streaming as a business, but we're no way married to that. We're really, our core focus is on the technology, on the platform, building the technology, building the platform, and getting users to feel like it's a good product to want to pay money for it, and hopefully down the road, we want to bring that tool set to all the existing companies in this space.
Okay. I mean, are you in direct competition with them for licenses?
Well, they definitely license a lot of content.
They're doing simulcast now.
Right. So I think that's really positive for the entire industry. Okay. Between the two of us, we pretty much licensed out all of last season.
Yeah.
And I hope that that's a trend that continues, because that just gives the fans more options.
Yeah, I mean, speaking purely as just a member of the press who covers this stuff for a living, I mean, I love that, because it means we don't have to do stupid fan subs. We can just go to your site. We can go to Funimation. We can go to you guys. We can go where it's legal and promote that and talk about that, and it's good. So let's talk a little bit about your manga initiative. Now, this is brand new. And you talked a little bit about it at Anime Expo, but what's the plan here? How does this? When did you recognize this is the space to move into, and how is that coming along?
Well, to give the listeners a little bit more background about what the manga initiative is, I don't think we've really disseminated much information about it. We're partnering with Bitway, and they strategically invested into Crunchyroll for us to undertake a manga initiative. Now, as background, Bitway, not many people understand what Bitway is. Bitway is a subsidiary of Toppon. Mm-hmm. So Toppon is the biggest print company in the world. They actually physically print onto trees whatever the publishers have in terms of content. Now, Bitway is Toppon's digital subsidiary, and Bitway's business is licensing content from Japanese partners, publishers who Toppon already works with, and distributing that on cell phones in Japan. So their business is purely mobile cell phones. And what we're doing with Bitway is we're basically working with them to build a digital manga distribution platform for the U.S. Now, the reason Bitway picked Crunchyroll to work with them is, as I've highlighted earlier, we're really technology guys. We're really internet guys. And we're focused on how to build the best experience for the user. And that's really the value we bring to the table. But what I don't think it should be viewed as is anything competitive to what the existing distribution markets is doing. I would say it's really we're going to provide a set of tools for the existing distributors to distribute their content in a digital fashion, whether it's on PC or on mobile devices or on iPad. We're really there to enable that business.
Right. Okay. So do you have the software in place? I mean, do you know what is going to resemble, like, iBooks or something like that? I mean, do you have any idea what the manga will look like to the user at the end?
Yeah. So We want to provide as seamless solution as possible for the viewer. At the end of the day, the hope is to build something where viewers are just, you know, reading the manga online or reading it on a mobile device, just flipping through pages. It won't be through the existing platforms, so it won't be selling a physical book through, a digital book through the Amazon Kindle or something like that. It'll be a completely new platform.
Okay, and this will be this is something that will pop up on, you know, Android phones and iPhones, and then the website, sort of like Crunchyroll is now.
Yeah.
Okay. How many? What kind of a library or catalog? You mentioned this huge distributor, but are you gonna? Obviously, you're not gonna have access to all of that. I mean, surely Viz still has rights to a lot of that stuff, and there's other manga publishers in the U.S. Are you gonna run into rights problems there, where you're sort of overlapping licenses, or what's
the deal? Well, I don't think so. I think this is really something where we're thinking a bit more about how we bring all of the existing industry on board with one single initiative, because we think that's really the best for the fans.
It's the best for you.
Well, we're not really licensing manga and distributing it. We're building the platform in order to monetize manga online,
which is very important. Right now, that's really important. So you've seen the other attempts that have been made. I don't think anyone's quite attempted what you're doing, but you've seen what Yen Press is doing, and Viz has some online stuff. They're even doing sort of a manga simulcast with Rinne. Is that a goal, like to have sort of simulcasted manga where it comes out on the Crunchyroll site, you know, within a few days or a day of it hitting Japanese newsstands?
That's a possibility, but. What I would say is there's really a distinction here. One is the platform we're building, and two is what is actually going to be on Crunchyroll. Of course, we like to have as much content as we can on Crunchyroll, but for example, local distributors like Viz and Yen Press will have their own content that's exclusive to their sites, and that in no way is something that we're trying to get in front of. We're basically want to offer this as a platform for all existing distributors to leverage if they want to have their content be powered through our platform or not. That's totally up to them.
Okay. Let me just try to see if I got this straight here. So you're developing this platform for other publishers to buy, to get into, but you're not necessarily, Crunchyroll will not be doing what they do with anime for manga?
That's right. We won't be licensing manga titles.
Okay. All right. I think a lot of people have that wrong. Like, they don't understand that. I certainly didn't. I thought you were going to be, hosting licensed titles that you licensed from the Topon or whatever to host on the site. But it sounds like this is a place for existing American publishers to go and have their stuff.
It's both. So Crunchyroll won't be licensing manga content, but Bitway has those relationships, and Bitway can definitely create a clearinghouse of digital manga contents that will be available on Crunchyroll.
So that's up to Bitway then?
That's right.
So the translation costs and all that, that'll be on Bitway?
Well, we're making Crunchyroll available for them as a portal if they want to expose our audience to their content, but the core business we focus now is building the platform to enable digital manga distribution and digital manga business.
I see. Okay. Well, I think that'll go a long way towards erasing something, because there's definitely some myths out there about exactly what's going on here. So that'll be good.
I'm sorry for being fairly vague. A lot of these are still moving pieces, but hopefully we'll have much more detail before end of this year.
Right. Yeah, that's great. This is all good information. So where do you see the industry going? Because obviously you guys are sort of at the front of the streaming side of things. I want to talk a little bit about finances here, because you just announced that you broke even, which I don't think a lot of people really understand. That's a major milestone for a startup. And
it is.
That's a big deal for a startup. You guys are breaking even. That's huge. But it took a little while to get there. And I would venture a guess and say that your initial the venture capital sort of investment was not that much. I think in terms of 21st century capitalism, you guys are sort of working with pennies here. But you have managed to make it work. Do you? I mean, obviously, you're going to say yes to this, but I do want to know. Like, is the future bright for anime in America? Do you think?
Well, I think the future is really bright for media. For I think there's really a period of time in which I would say 5-6 years that no one really knew where things were headed.
Yeah.
For example, we didn't know if there was going to be a simulcast made available. We didn't know if Japan cared. And a lot of fans took it on themselves to distribute the content to bring it to people in the U.S. But now we kind of know. I think the future is definitely going towards streaming. And everyone's very conscious of that fact. So I think definitely the future is very bright. And what really helps drive that point is the fact that we're seeing a lot of new devices come to the market. And this is really where something we think is going to be very promising. So a year and a half ago, you couldn't stream anime on your iPhone, on your iPad, or on a tablet device. But today, with Crunchyroll, you can. And you can basically stream the latest anime from Japan within an hour of TV broadcast onto your iPhone for only $5 a month. So we're really opening up the options in terms of how people experience the content. And we're really making new ways of consuming the content available that wasn't there before. So that's why I really think the space is very... very promising. Now, there could be a lot of factors that affects that. One, for example, is the fact that we're really a secondary market, the primary market being Japan. And I think, if Japanese population continues to decline, there will be, of course, less and less animation made. And if their videogram sales don't support content, then there's going to be less and less animation made. So we really don't have at this point as a business many ways to change the direction of those trends. But we really hope that fans can support us, fans can support everyone in this anime industry by say buying a Crunchyroll membership, buying a DVD, so that they can basically help support the local business, and we can hopefully grow it to a point very quickly in which we can actually start financing shows directly in Japan and hopefully reverse the trend of less and less anime being on television.
So co-productions are a goal for you. You guys eventually want to be listed as executive producers.
Well, I would say it's more of we get our content from Japan, and if that content, the number of that content is going downhill, then that directly affects our business. So,
right.
Of course, we have to figure out how to reverse that, how to help create more of this content. And we know that it can only be created in Japan because of the system, the filters they have set in place, so that only the best content makes it up to the very top.
Right. Okay. So, just from your personal perspective, I mean, a lot of hay has been made about the sort of declining state of anime creatively, and I've certainly noticed it myself. There's like two good shows every season, maybe three, and a lot of it is very commercial, overly commercial, in terms of just hitting the right otaku buttons to generate enough merchandise sales. Are you guys, do you personally see that? Is there something you wish was being made? And is there, what would you personally promote as like saying, okay, I want this sort of thing to be made because it's quality?
Well, I think our end goal is to hopefully, of course, license every single show for simultaneous broadcast worldwide. But we want to create something in which the fans can directly support the industry, and the fans can basically decide what they want to see and what they want to watch, and we're getting closer and closer to that. What people might not know is that every dollar we make, more than half of it goes back directly to the anime industry. So if you're buying a $6-7 Crunchyroll membership, more than half of that goes back to whichever show you're watching. So if you really like a show, really enjoy a show, if you watch it on Crunchyroll and you have a membership, then those dollars go directly back to the exact show that you're watching. But that's a really challenging question to ask, I think, because right now we don't have a lot of influence in terms of where the creative direction goes. And I think no one really does. It's a creative process. All we can hope for is by voting with our dollars, by supporting the industry as a whole, then it'll help foster new creativity and new content that people like. And, you know, speaking of that, that's really a great segue into something I do like to pimp out on the show. So there was a title that we really liked as an entire company, and we found that there's a way in order to license it. So we're basically helping to bring a title to market. It's the first time we've done this, but we're licensing a title and doing DVD distribution of that title.
Oh, you're getting in a DVD. Okay.
Right. We're helping to create a DVD, right?
So are you handling distribution?
We're not handling the distribution aspect, but we're handling the production, the management, and so forth, the promotions and the financing.
Wow. Okay. Can you tell us what the title is?
Yeah. So your listeners are going to definitely be in for a treat. We licensed 5 centimeters per second. It's okay. Not a new show, but we really like Makoto Shinkai. We really like the artist. We really like Comics Wave and the quality of the animation, the storyline he tells. So we licensed the show a while back, and now we're putting it out for DVD, hopefully sometime end of September, early October on store shelves. And we're working with a few industry companies to help make this happen. Bandai Entertainment is helping create the packaging and the distribution and the manufacturing. And we're working with Viz and New People in order to promote. We actually have a special screening event September 14th. If you're in San Francisco, go to New People. The screening event, you can see the production before it goes to DVD.
Okay, and I assume this will be using the new dub.
That's right.
So the new dub will be on the disc. So the packaging will have Crunchyroll branding and stuff like that?
A little bit.
Just a little bit?
Yeah.
Okay, interesting. That's very interesting. Well, you're not taking too much of a gamble on that, since you don't necessarily have to handle the manufacturing and distribution. But I guess, are you guys paying for all of that to happen? Are you paying Bandai to take care of all that stuff?
We are paying in order to acquire the license. The exact details of our deal with Bandai is something I don't want to disclose.
Yeah, I understand. Got to ask anyway. Okay, well, that's really interesting. So is this sort of an experiment? Or are you going to want to do more of this if this works out?
Of course we want to do more of this. We want to... our really company goal is to bring as much of the Japanese content to the U.S. as possible, whether it's streaming or, in this case, there's this opportunity to bring the DVD over, reintroduce the DVD to the U.S. audience.
Right. Well, I mean, that movie has been released a couple of times. Is there a worry that it's been released too many times? I mean, this will be the third DVD release for it.
Oh, no, I don't think so. We really try to focus on quality in this one. Mm-hmm. We actually have in-house guys who are from the fan community who is really picky about quality. So we definitely want to release a good quality product for fans and keep it at a very reasonable price.
Hmm. Okay. Well, that's very interesting news. Before we sort of get onto the Twitter questions here, I briefly wanted to talk a little bit about the audience. Now, I'm sure you've noticed a lot of what you're doing is sort of fueled. You keep talking about what the fans want. But in many cases, what the fans want is completely unrealistic in terms of how business actually operates. Do you sort of ignore that side of it and just say, okay, well, they want this, so let's try to do this? Or how do you react to the audiences? Because increasingly unrealistic demands on the industry. You know, I'm sure you know what I'm talking about. They want the moon delivered to them yesterday for free.
Well, I think we're really there's the fans, and then there's the industry in Japan. I think Crunchyroll is really the bridge between the two.
Yeah.
So we try our best to understand exactly what the fans want and why they want it. And of course, we try to work with industry to make it happen. We try to entertain every request that's possible and figure out what's the best way to proceed. So one thing I want to highlight here is that, for example, a lot of people have asked, why don't we do karaoke, or why don't we do translation of the songs in the shows? And that's actually something that we've listened to the fans, and we are doing something about it. So I would say in the next few weeks, you know, look to see our show starting to have opening songs and ending songs translated. What fans don't realize is that there's actually quite a lot of clearance, rights clearance, and general approvals that needs to happen for the simplest things. For example, on the subject of the songs, the karaoke, if you do a straightforward translation, you need to have the music cleared, the music artist approve the translation. But if you want to stylize the karaoke in a way that you see like a little dot and the color text and jumping up and down, those are actually artistic. Those are actually require artistic approval by the anime studios and by a lot more people. So that's actually quite a bit more difficult.
Yeah, because you're covering up the original animation. You're adding an artistic element to a song. Yeah, that's right. I can imagine that being kind of a nightmare. So it never strikes you, sort of weigh these things as, well, that's never going to happen, or, well, we can try to make that happen.
Well, it's I think it's really up to Crunchyroll to push the envelope on what is possible. And I think as long as the fans keep supporting our initiatives and our efforts, we'll be able to get more and more happen. It doesn't ever happen overnight, but we can keep trying to make small changes and keep pushing. And hopefully down the road in the future, it's something that the fans really can appreciate. But not every initiative can be done, of course, unfortunately. And there's a lot of reasons, as you can understand, for that. But we'll keep trying to push on behalf of the fans.
Right. Okay. And very briefly, I wanted to touch on this, and this is sort of important. One of the biggest things that's sort of happened lately that has tested the metal of simulcasting, tested the streaming, the entire infrastructure of streaming, is the sheer amount of leaks that have happened. Now, a lot of episodes have leaked out, and, you know, just recently we had a case where somebody was leaking them straight out of TV Tokyo weeks before they aired. How big a challenge is this for you guys? Like, I'm sure you take security really seriously, but that's got to be a nightmare, because the minute that happens, you lose a whole bunch of trust with the Japanese studios.
Well, at least I can comment in that case, it was definitely not Crunchyroll.
Yeah.
And
I think people don't understand that.
We definitely take security very seriously. But in that case, I can comment, it's also not TV Tokyo. It's really, of course, when these real-time broadcasting things happen, they require a lot of security, as you can imagine. So being engineering background, of course, we try to focus and make sure that we don't leak the content, and we have quite a lot of security in place. So really today, we haven't had a single leak. We've had, we're batting 100% on this. But it's very critical for the entire industry. That's something I can't really highlight enough. It's not just one company leaking, or one studio, whatever, or even one broadcaster or something. Eventually, if this enough of this happens, then everyone might lose their privileges. So it's really like a Armageddon scenario for everyone.
Yeah, I think everyone can agree that it's bad for everybody when that stuff happens. Those leaks are not good news for anyone. Well, then we better get to Twitter, because we got a couple here, and I don't want to take up too much of your time tonight. Okay, this is a good one. From Modern Rocker, you've commented on this in the past, but we can talk a little bit about it here. Is Crunchyroll looking into an Xbox 360 PS3 streaming a la Netflix Watch instantly?
Yes. So we believe... let me back into a little bit of the philosophy of this. Content and media, there's really two ways you can cut it. There's access and there's ownership. So every business that's built has been either access or ownership. And what we've seen is that in the new digital era, access has become more ubiquitous for everyone. And that's actually a very positive thing. Now you can watch anything you want, at least for Crunchyroll, on mobile, iPhone, Android devices, whatever, and on top of the PC. But of course, our goal is to provide access. Our business is to provide access of that content. And we want to be everywhere that the consumers are. So of course, yes, we're looking at reaching the television. We're looking at partnerships and building on top of our platform to be able to stream directly to TV, whether that's through set-top boxes, consoles, direct TV integrations, Blu-ray players, whatever.
Would you be considering like the Netflix Instant Watch as like a model? Because it's great. Like, that's a great... I love that service. Everybody I know loves that service.
Well, for that service, it's... they have a fair bit of amount of negotiation they did because they have a lot more users, a lot more subscribers.
Right.
But definitely we want to make something very seamless for users to stream directly onto their consoles or whatever's connected to their television.
All right. From Sam6782, is Crunchyroll going to post Fairy Tail episodes starting from episode 1 in the future instead of it being only available to premium members?
That's something we're negotiating. Okay. So I don't have a definitive answer for that just yet.
All right. From Steve Brandon, OTT, obviously we've talked about this a little bit, but this is sort of a specific question. Any hope that Crunchyroll might ever get a physical media label for those of us Luddite DVD Blu-ray collector types? I guess you mentioned you're getting into the DVD game in a fashion, but he's asking specifically about a label.
Can you specify what that means?
So, like, will we see Crunchyroll DVDs on the shelf? Because I would imagine the 5 centimeters per second is probably going to have a big Bandai logo on it, right?
Yeah, I think we're really focused on the streaming business, on the access business. But in the special cases where we really like a title and the title doesn't really have a home anywhere else existing through existing distribution, then yeah, we'd love to help bring it to the U.S. as a physical merchandise.
From Cetamine's Lover... or Ketamine's Lover. Cobra was streamed uncensored. Why doesn't Crunchyroll get more Eki and fan service shows uncensored? Just put an age rating gate.
So a lot of the challenge here is what's being on broadcast and what we can stream on our site. So a lot of times when we license a show, we don't actually have the materials for the uncensored.
Right.
But that's something we're looking into, providing more options for the content we do license based on age, yes.
Actually, that brings me to another story that I'm sort of curious if you can verify this or not, because I heard this, and I want to know if it's true. There's this incredibly raunchy show called Charger Girl Juden-chan that came out about a year ago, I think, and they offered it to us, actually, to stream on Anime News Network, and we looked at the promotional art and said, nope, and then you guys picked it up, and then... the story that I've heard is that you sort of found out about how incredibly inappropriate the content was, and you couldn't really run it on your site because it was obviously like 17 plus only. And so, and thusly, you had to sort of hurriedly get the scrubbed television version.
Well, we do have the age gate currently in place. So if there is content that's 17 plus, then we can definitely facilitate that. I think in that case, we just got the TV edition. I don't think it's something where we said, you know, we don't really want to facilitate distributing the uncut version.
Right. So if they'd have given you the DVD version, you would have run that?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Yes. And society would have been done a favor, I'm sure. all right. Okay, from Ed Sizemore, what would be the possibility of streaming older series like the original Cyborg 009 or Legends of the Galactic Heroes? And actually related to that, the next question is about World Masterpiece Theater. So I guess people really want to know if you ever consider going back and digging up some of that old stuff.
Yes, we definitely always look at more content besides what's currently broadcast on television. I think really... it's a matter of focus, and we love to have our fans, have everyone let us know what they like for us to license. And then we can try to take a crack at it and figure out if it's too difficult or if it's possible or not possible. But I definitely want to leave it up to the fans to chime in on this one.
What's the best way for them to do that?
That's a good question. So currently what we have in place is a very simple survey system. We run a survey every 2-3 weeks for premium members. I think there's one going on right now, and we leave a box where they can just chime in and tell us whatever they want. Actually, I personally read each one of those myself, so I can definitely have our guys set up a different system where they can suggest what content they love to see on Crunchyroll and other ways we can improve the service.
Okay, this is a specific question about the UK. Somebody wants to know what happened with Haruhi in the UK because it was announced as available and then later quietly blocked with no announcement. Word of mouth is that you never had it to begin with.
I'd have to go back and look at the details on that. But in general, we try to get all rights worldwide, excluding Japan. But it's a title by title challenge. For example, some licensors cut out certain regions. Some licensors cut out Asia or Europe or whatever. So we, you know, we try our best to convince licensors that, you know, we have a lot of fans in a lot of paying customers in the UK and Europe, and you know, they love to see your show. But you know, it's really up to the licensors on this one.
Right, and that's a challenge in and of itself, trying to move into new territories.
Right.
Like, isn't it like a really big percentage of your viewership like Southeast Asian or something like that, or Filipino or something?
That's right. We like have about 20-ish percent in Southeast Asia, but most of our traffic is still from North America.
Right. And actually, just to clarify something really quick, that's why you're not necessarily ad-based, you're subscription-based. Because it's
that's right.
Ad sales, doing ad sales in Southeast Asia would be a nightmare, I think. Okay, from Alex Leavitt, we got a couple more here. How has Crunchyroll changed how fans watch anime? Do you think it's changed it? And do you see the same community using Crunchyroll with a second group of fans who don't know how to use it or don't know it exists? I guess he's sort of wondering how broad your reach is across anime fandom as a whole is.
So I definitely like to think that we help change the way fans watch anime. Before we started officially doing simulcast business, there wasn't really anything like it. There wasn't a legitimate way for fans to watch simultaneous streams right after TV broadcast, and there wasn't a way for fans to watch a show, like a show, and contribute money directly back to the licensors. So, and what's really important about that is licensors really need the revenue in order to create more shows. And we've heard a lot of arguments saying, you know, we're only 10-20% of the market, whatever we contribute back makes no difference. Those are all categorically wrong. It's really about, you know, every dollar that goes above the initial cost helps offset the cost and help create new, fund new projects. If everything's just a little bit in the red, then yeah, whatever we contribute definitely makes a difference. Now, regarding the reach of Crunchyroll as a site, I definitely think we don't have reach. We haven't reached all of anime fandom. I don't even know how to quantify the percentage we have reached, but we're always looking for new ways to expand our viewership and figure out how to reach more fans to introduce them to our service.
Okay, our final question is one you're not probably going to like at all, but I feel like I need to ask it. It comes from Severance, who's our friend over at Anime World Order, and this is a tough one, but I think it's legit. Do you think Crunchyroll has set a trend of starting out stealing property in the hopes of getting a massive investment and then going legit? There's a lot of sites out there that are starting up just like you guys did, and he's wondering if you feel any sort of responsibility for that.
So to properly answer that question, I think I really need to explain the history of Crunchyroll, give the listeners a fair perspective into how we saw things and how we operated things and the choices we made. And I think from that, the answer will be you know, fairly obvious in terms of the choices we made and how we built this business. So Crunchyroll was founded by myself and three other founders back in 2006. We all had day jobs. We were working at internet startup companies, but we were all engineers, and we wanted to do something as a passion project. And one of the things that was really doing well at the time was YouTube. So we looked at YouTube, and we thought, you know, technically it didn't seem that difficult. Back in the day, streaming video was just starting. So yeah, technically it felt difficult, but we wanted to build something like it to really try out. So once we built that model, we shared it with some of our friends who, as you can guess, are mostly Asian or like Asian content, Asian culture. And instead of uploading cats on shower curtains or Rickroll or whatever, they put up a lot of Asian content. So we didn't realize at the time, but the community started forming and there were so many passionate fans. And the site got so big so quickly that we really didn't know what to do. So we all actually quit our day jobs. We were maxing out our credit cards on the bandwidth bills. We didn't really run ads or anything at the time. So we're paying out of our pocket to be able to provide the service. And there were so many times in which we contemplated that we should just shut it down. It was costing us a lot of money, and we felt that we were taking on a lot of liability because there were users uploading the content, but the content wasn't necessarily licensed. So this went on until about middle of 2007, and the site was big enough that we basically were working on Crunchyroll full-time without pay, maxing out credit cards and bandwidth. And that was when VCs actually approached us. They saw that there was such a passionate audience, and they felt like it would be really a shame to kind of turn it off. So they said, we want to put some money into your company, but we want to make sure that you're heading in the right direction. And so at that point, we basically said, we're completely on board. And the direction we want to take is we want to clean up the site and license everything on the site to take it from YouTube to Hulu. So all of 2008, we went to Japan and we basically told each licensor, we have a site called Crunchyroll. We have a lot of fans and they're very passionate about your content. But if you choose today, we will shut down the site. If you choose today, we will shut down the site completely. And if you shut down the site, then of course it's going to be a great loss, but it's really your choice because it's your content that brought all the fans on board. So all of them, there were some that were skeptical, but a lot of them embraced the site, embraced the audience, and embraced the fans. And they said, there's a lot of value here. We want to create a way for fans to legitimately watch the content. And so we created a plan to be able to start off simulcast business. And basically, at the end of 2008, it was New Year's Eve, we took off everything that was previously uploaded to the site by users, and we put up only what was licensed. So that was really a critical point in our history. That day, New Year's Eve, New Year's Day 2009, we didn't really know what was going to happen. We hoped, we speculated that the fans would be supportive of what we're doing. And if we made the transition and the site didn't live, then at least we had a best attempt to do it. We tried our best. Fortunately, the fans stuck around. They're very supportive of us, and they're very supportive in general of the direction we're headed, of being able to provide them a legal place to watch anime. And that's kind of how things led up to this point. Nowhere do we really consciously say, we're going to go out and we're going to illegally distribute content. It all kind of opportunistically fell into our lap, and we felt like we had to do the right thing to basically license everything on the site and provide this as a vehicle, as a platform for Japanese content licensors to reach fans worldwide. And I guess fortunately for us, the licensors really embraced that. And the community, the fans, really embrace that. So we've been able to, as a result, carve out a business and create a new direction and a new experience for anime fans. So I think it's really the fact that we had the fan support and we had the understanding of the industry that we were able to accomplish this. There's so many times when we were very lucky to be blessed with this opportunity to help create a new experience for fans and a new way to watch the content. So I'm not really sure if that answers the question directly.
No, it doesn't. That doesn't answer his question. I'm very curious to know this because there are other sites. So would you incur, like, what he's asking is there are a bunch of other sites now, especially sites that have almost getting close to destroying the Region 1 manga publishing business that are now, sort of shutting down after they got the light shined on and the cockroaches are scattering. But a lot of, he's asking, do you feel at all responsible? Because you guys got famously like $2 million in venture capital, from, the way you started your business was not honest. And he's wondering if you feel any guilt or you feel any responsibility for the fact that a lot of other sites are trying the same thing. Do you think they got that idea from you?
So I think there's really a distinction here between taking away from existing business and creating new business. When we first started, there was no legitimate way for fans to watch content, this content online. What we're seeing now is a lot of people still distribute content illegally, even though there is a legitimate way to watch, though there is a legitimate way to experience the content. I honestly believe that because we really embraced we did things the right way. We went to the licensors and we said, we're willing to shut down the site tomorrow. We proactively said, you know, we want to get your blessing to go forward with this.
Was the VC funding contingent on that being a yes?
No, and that's really the risk for the VCs to take. If things fell apart, then no, that's the risk they take.
Okay, but so what do you have to say then to these companies, these people who are basically doing what you did? Would you tell them don't do what we did?
I think don't start the way we started. I think if they really wanted to help support the anime industry, the manga industry, they shouldn't pirate content that is already legitimately viewable. And I think if they really wanted to help create atmosphere where the industry helps support the industry, then they should reach out and say, hey, we want to support the industry. Tell us what to do. Give the keys back to the industry. And that's what we did.
Okay. All right. I'm just curious. I think it's a good question. I would comment that you guys got all that traffic initially. You got all that interest in traffic because you were providing Naruto, which was being released here when you guys started up. That was not exactly an obscure franchise when things started up, when Crunchyroll got its launch. And, it was no secret that was a major part of your traffic in the beginning days. You know, the reason you got interest from venture capitalists in the first place. I would offer that as an addendum and wonder. It's not necessarily that these people are providing access to. It's not like in the beginning you guys were only hosting obscure or not as popular unlicensed shows. There were plenty of licensed shows on Crunchyroll back in when it first started up.
Oh, back in the day, Naruto wasn't available for simulcast.
It wasn't available for simulcast. That's right. True.
And we completely respected all DMCA takedown requests.
Right.
When we received the DMCA request to take down any content, we did very promptly.
Okay.
And we basically went back to Shueisha and we said, we have the site. Do you want us to turn it off? We can do it today or we can do it tomorrow. But it's really your choice. The audience is aggregated because they came because of your content. So we handed the keys back to the industry, and they said, we want to use this as a tool to distribute the content to grow more fans. And that's really that opportunity I spoke of before that really I'm appreciative that they gave me.
Right. Okay. So you would encourage any site that it thinks they're going to be the next Crunchyroll or thinks they're going to be, the Crunchyroll of manga, which you're obviously already doing, now is not the time to get your start illegally.
I think if they are already illegal, then they should definitely hand the keys back in the industry and, take it on faith.
Okay. Thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, anytime. Thank you for having me.
Okay, everybody, that's our show. I want to thank Kuhn for joining us and Gia for sitting in the co-host chair. As always, remember, subscribe to us on iTunes, and we'll see you all next week.